So we just sang a couple of songs about God's power. We sang about how God reigns and that God loves us and that he's bigger than our problems and that God is powerful and that he is king. And we remind ourselves of that when we come here, and that's very important. But the truth is that when we're out there experiencing everyday life, the frustrations, the challenges, the obstacles, it's easy for us to forget that. Especially when we come up against a massive problem. When we come up against those problems that are bigger than we are, that seem overwhelming, those problems that are intimidating to us, those problems that just steal away our joy and that we have no answer for them, it's easy for us to forget that God is powerful. And to become so focused on how big the problem is that we overlook God's involvement in the middle of that. Last week, we began looking at David's confrontation with Goliath, and Goliath was a big problem. Just a quick recap of some things we touched on last week. Goliath was a big guy. He stood over 10 feet, or almost 10 feet tall. And we said last week, that's almost as tall as Sean is. A big guy, right? And like 10 feet tall, like I said last week, the ceilings here are 8 feet. So Goliath wouldn't even be able to fit up here. His head would be 10 or 2 feet into this ceiling. That's a big guy, right? He's wearing 200 pounds of armor. Like, lift up 200 pounds and feel how heavy that is. He's wearing it as clothing. So he's got all this protection. He's got a guy walking in front of him carrying a shield for further protection. And this is a guy who's got a track record of battle after battle after battle and victory after victory. He is the Philistine champion. He's the best of the best, and he is undefeated. And he steps forward and challenges Israel, and the challenge he lays down is this: send one man to come and fight me. And we'll have a one-on-one battle to the death. And the losing side will be the slave of the winning side for a period of time. And that was the challenge. And so King Saul and his armies, when they saw Goliath and heard the challenge, they put their heads together and they began to strategize and say, what are we going to do about this? How are we going to respond? Who's going to volunteer to go and fight him? And they came up with the most reasonable, logical response imaginable. They ran and hid. That's exactly what they did. Nobody wanted to fight him. And they go into hiding, and the Bible uses words like terrified, deeply shaken. It says they ran away in fear, and they went into hiding. And this goes on for 40 days. Every morning and every evening, Goliath comes out to the front lines, shouts across the valley, taunts them, threatens them, invites somebody to come and fight him. And every single day for 40 days, they run and hide, and nobody is willing to fight him. And as we talked about Goliath and how intimidating he was, we compared him to the giants that you and I face in our lives. Those problems we experience that are bigger than us. Those things in our lives that are just overwhelming. It just feels like it's too much for us to handle. It's those things that are so complicated, those things that we just don't have any answers for. And they step into our lives, they threaten us, they intimidate us, they taunt us. And those giants could be any number of things. Your giant could be a financial problem. It could be that one thing that came up that was unexpected that just completely threw everything off financially for you. That unexpected expense that came up and you say, I don't have the money to cover this, and I'm already maxed out on all these credit cards and I've got so much debt, I don't even know where to begin, and you just feel overwhelmed. That could be your giant. Your giant could be a relationship that's gone bad. And it's just painful and it's complicated and things went way wrong somewhere at some point. And now you look at it and you say, I wish I could fix it, but I don't know what to do. I don't even know where to begin to unravel this whole thing. And I have no answers. That could be your giant. Your giant could be a physical illness. It could be that thing, that problem, those symptoms that you live with every single day, and you know it's there, the doctors know it's there, but they have no answers for you. It's just kind of a thing. You just kind of have to manage your life and work around it because it's just there, and it is overwhelming, and it's frustrating. That could be your giant. Your giant could be an addiction. That one temptation that you give into time after time after time, and you have tried everything you can think of to overcome it, but it has its claws dug so deep into you. Every time you feel like you're making progress, it grabs onto you again, and you don't know what to do to overcome it. I don't know what your giant is, but I know that every one of us has at least one. And our giants, when they confront us, they force us to make a decision of how we're going to handle that giant, how we're going to respond to that giant. And the main thing I want to communicate today is this: you can't control whether you will face a giant, but you can control how you face that giant. And I think many times our default response is to respond to our giants pretty much the same way that Saul and his armies did. We just kind of say, well, this is too big. I don't have any answers. I can't fix this. There's no solution. And so we just accept that, okay, this is a part of my life. I just need to kind of manage and work around it and just incorporate it somehow into my daily schedule. It's there and I can't defeat it. So it's a part of my life for the rest of my life. And we just accept it and just kind of live with it. And as I said last week, I believe with all my heart that God has more for us than that. Because there is another way to respond to our giants. We're in 1 Samuel 17 again this morning. And as I said, Goliath came out and he challenged Israel day after day for 40 days. And for 40 days they ran and hid. For 40 days they did nothing. For 40 days they were terrified of him. But everything changed on day 41. Take a look at verse 23 in 1 Samuel 17. Here's what it says. Goliath, the Philistine champion from Gath, came out from the Philistine ranks. So on this day, he comes out again with his usual taunt, with his usual challenge, saying, I defy you. Send a man to come fight me. Nobody is going to do it. None of you are willing. Send one man to come and fight me. And nobody does anything. But things are about to change because something significant happens in verse 23. Look at what else it says. Then David heard him shout his usual taunt to the army of Israel. That was the turning point. Because David heard him that day. And on that day, someone new heard his taunts. Someone who was not willing to just accept it. Someone who was not willing to back down and to run away and hide in fear. And this was pivotal. Everything changed in that moment when David heard him for the first time. Now, the next couple of verses tell us that when he came out and shouted his taunt once again, Israel did what they had done every day before then. They ran and they hid and they went into their tents. And verses 24 and 25 tell us a bit of their conversation. They get together in their tents and they say, did you see how big that guy is? Holy cow, he's massive. He's impossible to beat. None of us can stand up to him. The king has offered this amazing reward. The person that fights him and beats him gets to marry the king's daughter, become part of the royal family. That person and his family have to pay no taxes for the rest of their lives, but nobody is willing to confront Goliath. And so they're talking about how big Goliath is and how massive this problem is and that there's no answers. But then David steps in verse 26, and David asked the soldiers standing nearby, what will a man get for killing this Philistine and ending his defiance of Israel? Who is this pagan Philistine anyway that he's allowed to defy the armies of the living God? And like I said last week, what I love about David's immediate reaction is this. They are talking about how big Goliath is. David doesn't ask any questions about Goliath. He doesn't even mention him at first. David doesn't say, wait, how big did you say this guy is? Holy cow, did you see the armor? Did you see how big that spear is? I would hate to be impaled by that spear. How many people has he killed? How impossible is this problem? David doesn't focus on any of that. He jumps in right away and says, so what do I get when I beat this guy? Like, he's already talking about victory. He's already talking about what happens after this giant has been defeated. And he says, who does this guy think he is anyways? And what David shows us here, David shows us that there is another way we can respond when we are faced with our giants. We don't have to hide in fear. We can stand up to them. But the story also shows us in the next few verses, and this is what we're going to look at today, is there are some other obstacles we face. When we make a decision, we're going to confront those giants like we talked about last week. When we say, yes, I'm going to stand up, I'm not just going to accept this, most of the time, there's a few other obstacles that pop up before we even get to that point. Because after David says what he says here, now the critics begin to jump in and undermine what he is saying he's going to do. Hey, have you ever noticed how whenever you make a stand for something, Whenever you step forward and defend the defenseless, or whenever you step forward and say, I'm going to change this problem, when you refuse to accept the status quo and you start talking about doing something new, doing something different, you start talking about victory and hope. Have you ever noticed how people will come out of the woodwork? They are ready and eager to tell you all the reasons why it cannot possibly happen. That's exactly what happens with David in the next few verses. And as we said last week, David was the youngest. He had several older brothers. And his three oldest brothers are there on the front lines. So David's father told David, he says, here's some food, here's some supplies. I want you to take these and go to your brothers on the front lines and take this stuff to them, and then come back home and tell me how things are going. And so that's why David is there on that day. And he gets there and he hears about the giant. He sees Goliath and he starts asking questions about what happens when I defeat this giant. But then something else happens. Look at verse 28. When David's oldest brother, Eliab, heard David talking to the men, he was angry. What are you doing around here anyway? He demanded. What about those few sheep you're supposed to be taking care of? I know about your pride and deceit. You just want to see the battle. What have I done now? David replied. I was only asking a question. So David faced more than Goliath. He had some pretty discouraging criticism he had to overcome before he even got to Goliath. And the first criticism came from his oldest brother, Eliab. Now, let me just point out, isn't it true that those who are closest to us carry the most weight in our lives? Like those who are closest to us, we tend to value their opinions and their statements more highly than other people. They have more of an emotional impact on us. Those who are closest to us have the greatest potential to wound us the most deeply. Like if I get a haircut, and I need to get a haircut, if I go get a haircut and it doesn't go so well, and I stop at the store on my way home and some stranger walks past and they say, well, that's a stupid looking haircut, you know how I'm gonna respond? I'm just gonna keep walking. I don't really care. Like, whatever, have a nice day. I don't really care what that person thinks or says. Their opinion has no impact on me, right? But if I get home and walk in the door and my wife or my daughter respond the same way, that kind of hurts, right? Like, that cuts a little deeper. Those who are closest to us, they have a deep impact on us emotionally. They are capable of building us up the most or tearing us down the worst. And so this is David's oldest brother, someone who from his youngest childhood he looks up to. He's the man. He's the guy I want to be like. And here he is tearing him down. And it's especially difficult when it is consistent. Because take a look again at verse 29 down near the bottom of the screen. David says, his immediate response is, what have I done now? What does that statement tell you? It's happened before. Like, it'd be one thing to say, what's the problem? But no, he says, what did I do now? In other words, what is it this time? Now what are you upset with me for? Like, this has been going on probably for his whole life. If you remember, when the prophet went to the household to anoint someone as king, Dad and the brothers never even considered David as a possibility. Oh, he's the youngest. He's just out in the fields watching the sheep. You don't want to talk to him. He can't possibly be the one God has chosen. So David, for his whole life, has been overlooked by his older brother. And here his older brother is going after him. But also look at how he attacks him. Look at the criticism here. He goes right after his motives. He says, I know you. You're prideful. You're deceitful. You don't mean any of the stuff you're asking about. You just want to see some action. You're probably bored sitting on the hillside with those stupid sheep and you wanted to see some fighting going on. That's the real reason you're here. You're not going to do anything. And he goes right after his motives. And as you look at this, you kind of wonder, I wonder if Eliab, you think maybe he felt a little bitter that he was overlooked, that he was rejected as the man God chose to be king, and his little brother was chosen instead? Because if you remember just one chapter before, in chapter 16, when Samuel gets to the household of Jesse, the first one to come out was Eliab. And Samuel looks at Eliab and says, this has to be the guy. He's perfect. And God says to Samuel, no, I've rejected him. Look for someone else. And finally, David comes and Samuel says, that's him. I wonder if some of this criticism is coming from a bitter man who cannot accept that his brother was chosen by God and he was not. You know, a lot of times those who criticize us most deeply, a lot of times their criticism, it's not directed at us. It's directed at whatever problems they have been wounded by that they have not found healing for yet. And so he keeps after him, and look what else he says. He basically says, you don't belong here. Go take care of your few little sheep. Like he's questioning his importance. He's like, you have no role to play here. You are insignificant. You're just a shepherd. Just go and play with your little sheep. That's all you're good for. This is for the real men. You don't belong here. And he's completely trying to undermine his confidence. This criticism could have been debilitating, couldn't it? I mean, the story of David and Goliath, the story of David could have ended right here. If he had absorbed that criticism, if he had listened to it and agreed with it and said, you know what, he's right. What was I thinking? I don't belong here. I'm just a shepherd. I'm not going to fight this guy. There's no way. It's just not going to happen. Here's your stuff. I'm just going to leave. And the story would have been over. But thankfully, David did not respond that way. If you remember, David's asking this question: what's the reward for the man who fights and kills this giant? And who does this guy think he is anyways? Eliab confronts him, questions him, criticizes him, and then look at verse 30, David's response. It says he walked over to some others and asked them the same thing and received the same answer. So he just walks away from his brother and continues the conversation with somebody else. And I have to say, that is the best response. When somebody is going after you like that, the best response is to just walk away and refocus on what God has called you to do. Here is David basically saying to his brother, I don't have time for this. I'm here for something bigger, for something more important. I don't have to defend myself to you. I came here today to deliver some food to you. Here you go, eat it up and enjoy it. But I just found out, according to God's plan, I'm also here to deliver one stone, just one, to a very specific location, so I don't have time for this conversation anymore. I think it's very important for us to be discerning as to who we listen to and who we allow to influence us. You see, there are people in our lives who love us deeply and who care about our well-being and who want God's best for us. And sometimes they speak into our lives in a way that it's hard to hear. Sometimes people who love us need to say something to us that's hard for them to say and hard for us to listen to, but we need to listen to it. But there are other people, like Eliab, when they come after us, and instead of confronting us in love, they confront us in anger. As Eliab does here, they confront us because they're angry, because they're jealous, and they demand a response. And they undermine us, and they attack us, and they belittle our significance as a person, and they question God's purposes and God's calling on our lives, and it's this constant attack. When that happens to you, the best response is to walk away. Don't defend yourself. Don't engage. Just walk away and refocus on the mission God has for you. And for some of you today, that might be where you are. Some of you today, maybe you can't even imagine taking on the big giant because you have been so defeated by what others have said to you and about you. And if that is where you are, if others have belittled you and demeaned you and undermined you and treated you as though you were insignificant, I want you to know you are more than that. You are loved. You are a person that Jesus came and died for. You are a person that he wants to spend eternity with. He has a plan and a purpose for you that is amazing, that is remarkable. If you're a follower of Christ, you are more than a conqueror. He has placed his spirit within you. He has placed his hand of power upon you. And he has a calling for you that is incredibly powerful. And some of you may need to be reminded of that. And stop listening to the critics. Because God's voice in your life is more important than theirs. And so David walks away from his brother Eliab as he is condemning him. But he has one more hurdle after that. Look at verse 31. Then David's question was reported to King Saul, and the king sent for him. So somebody goes to the king and says, hey, there's this guy who's asking questions about the reward you're offering. And Saul says, bring him in. So I love the first words out of David's mouth. He walks into Saul's tent. Don't worry about this Philistine, David told Saul. I'll go fight him. I mean, he just walks in and says, hey, don't sweat it. I got this. I love that. He just comes in and says, I'll take care of this. I'm the guy. I'm in. But look at Saul's response. Don't be ridiculous, Saul replied. There's no way you can fight this Philistine and possibly win. You're only a boy, and he's been a man of war since his youth. Again, he's undermining his confidence. He's attacking who he is. You're just a kid. You're just a shepherd. This is ridiculous. What are you even thinking? Let me just point out what a critic really is. A critic is someone who will point out how incorrectly and imperfectly you are doing something that they're too afraid to even try doing. That's what a critic is. A critic is someone who, they're not about to step up. They're not about to take any risk. They're not about to even try what you're talking about doing. They're not willing to do any of that, but they're more than willing to snipe at you and to pick at you and attack you for doing what they're afraid to do. Every person who has never killed a giant will tell you that it's not possible to kill the giant. And so Eliab is criticizing David. Hey, Eliab, are you going to go fight him? You're the older brother. You're here on the front lines. You're all soldiered up. No, not me. Saul is criticizing David. Saul, what about you? You're the king. You're our leader. You're the biggest guy in all of Israel. Are you going to? No, not me. Forget it. You know, sometimes our response to our critics just needs to be, don't complain about how I'm doing it unless you're willing to work with me to find a better way to do it. But if all you're doing is critiquing me and you're not willing to be a part of this, then you're just a whiner, you're just a complainer, and you are not part of the solution. You're just making it worse than it needs to be. Don't let your critics have influence in your life. Don't give them voice in your life. Don't let your critics keep you from taking on the giant, and don't let them keep you from fulfilling the calling God has for your life. You've got to be more convinced of the reality of God and the power of God than you are convinced by the arguments of the critics. And that was true of David. David was willing to look past the voice of the critics and to say, you know what? Whatever they say, God has something that he's up to here, and I'm going to follow his voice instead of theirs. So take a look at his response to Saul, verse 34. But David persisted. I love that word, persisted. It means he did not give up. He's faced one critic, overcame him. Okay, that's done. Well, now I've got another critic. So he keeps on persisting. He doesn't give up. David persisted. I've been taking care of my father's sheep and goats, he said. When a lion or a bear comes to steal a lamb from the flock, I go after it with a club and rescue the lamb from its mouth. If the animal turns on me, I catch it by the jaw and club it to death. Let me just stop here and point out that's pretty hardcore, right? I mean, he's watching these sheep. A lion comes and carries off a sheep in its mouth. David doesn't say, well, it's just one sheep. Enjoy your meal. I've got all these other ones. No, he goes after that one. He goes after the lion, grabs it by the jaw, and clubs it to death. Like, have you ever gone hunting with a club? Hunting bear with a club? That's hardcore, right? You're still here. You're still breathing. So I assume none of you have done that. So David says, I've done this, but then look at verse 36. I've done this to both lions and bears. Notice the S at the end of those words. More than one lion, more than one bear. Like, he's got a track record here. I've done this to both lions and bears, and I'll do it to this pagan Philistine too, for he has defied the armies of the living God. Now he's drawing the battle lines. He's saying, this guy's not just opposing us. He's defying the armies of the living God. That's really what's going on here. And then he says this, the Lord who rescued me from the claws of the lion and the bear will rescue me from this Philistine. Remember, Eliab was condemning David and saying, you're prideful, you're filled with defeat. This is not pride. Where is his confidence? His confidence is in God. He's saying, I did this. God's the one who empowered me to do it. And I'm going to do this now. And God is the one who will empower me to do this now. So here's Saul undermining David, saying, you're just a boy, you're just a kid, you can't possibly do this. And David says, no, you misunderstand. This is not me versus Goliath. This is God taking on Goliath. That's what's happening here today. And let me just point out a couple things about David's response to Saul here. First of all, David goes back in his history. And he says, here's what God has done in my life before. And because he's done this with the bear and with the lion, because I've seen his faithfulness here and here and here, that's why I am convinced he's going to do something amazing today because of what he's done for me in the past. You want to have the kind of confidence David had when he steps into the tent and says to Saul, don't worry about this giant, I'll fight him. You want to have the kind of confidence David had when Eliab condemns him and David just walks away. When Saul critiques him and David persists and does not give up. You want to have that kind of confidence. You know how you do it. You remember God's faithfulness in your life. That's how. It is so important for us to not lose sight of how God has been at work in our lives. That's why in the prayer room, we have a board over there with clipped paper, and those are for prayer requests. If you've got a prayer request you like people praying for, when they go in there, write it down on that piece of paper. But there's another board we're going to put in there in a couple of weeks, and it's the answers to prayer board. And that's where when you see God do something amazing, you write it on there and clip it up there as a reminder to yourself and to the rest of us of God's faithfulness. It is so important for us to remember his faithfulness. So if you're facing the critics, and it's starting to undermine your confidence. If you're facing those smaller challenges and it's undermining your confidence, remember God's faithfulness to you. Remember the stories, the answers to prayer, the ways that God has come through in your life. Remember his faithfulness through history, all of these amazing stories we read about in Scripture. Remember his faithfulness in your history. Because as we do that, as we remember his faithfulness in the past, it gives us confidence to face the challenges in the here and now. The next thing I want to say about David's response to Saul is this. Past victories prepare us for bigger challenges. Think about this. When David arrives on the scene that day, he has no idea what he's about to face. Like, he got up that morning, packed up some supplies and some food to take to his brothers, and his plan is go there, deliver the food, see how they're doing, and come back home. That was it. That was the plan. Go there and come back home, and that's it. And David, as he goes there, doesn't have a clue he's about to face the biggest giant of his life. Isn't that true of us? We get up in the morning, we go through our day, it's just another day, and all of a sudden, bam, out of nowhere, we're confronted with this problem. We didn't even know was waiting out there for us. We've got this difficulty, this obstacle, this challenge that we had no idea we were going to have to deal with that day. It's not like we get a warning. It's not like you read the paper in the morning and, you know, on page 3 it says, warning, Dave Hunter, today at 3:13 p.m. you're going to get a phone call with bad news. It doesn't happen that way. It's bad stuff. It just happens. And it catches us off guard. But here's what we need to see about this. Even though David had no idea that he was going to face a giant that day, because he had faced other challenges in the past and faced them instead of backing down, because he had faced other challenges in the past and he saw God come through in a powerful way because of his history, because of what had happened before, he faced Goliath ready to face Goliath. He was not unprepared. Unaware, yes, but he was not unprepared. Because the challenges he had faced in the past prepared him for the challenge he was going to face that day. Thank God for the challenges in our lives. A lot of times we face these smaller obstacles, these everyday frustrations, these situations that aren't massive, they're not life-changing, they're just irritants, and they kind of throw us off, and they're frustrating, and we say, okay, God, why did you allow this to happen to me today? Could it be that sometimes God allows those challenges in our lives because it's the training ground for a bigger challenge we're going to face later on? That it's the preparation for us to deal with a bigger giant, to be ready for a bigger opportunity that God presents us with at another point. You see, it's in those smaller challenges, it's in those smaller obstacles that God is training us to trust him. That he is training us, giving us an opportunity to walk in his power, to walk in his presence. It's in facing those critics. That's where we learn to say, I'm not going to listen to their voice. I'm going to listen to God's voice instead, because what he has to say to me and about me matters more than what they have to say to me and about me. You see, when we learn from the small stuff, it prepares us for the bigger stuff. But when we face those smaller challenges, if all we do is whine and complain about it, when we face those critics, if we listen to what they say and absorb their criticism, then we could miss out on the best training available for the bigger challenge that will literally turn our lives around if we handle it the right way. So if you're in the middle of that kind of a situation, a smaller challenge or somebody who's critical, in the middle of that, you say, God, teach me. God, I know my default response is to get upset, to get frustrated, to just throw my hands up in frustration. I know that that's my default response, but God, would you teach me through this? Would you prepare me through this? Would you help me to rely on your faithfulness in the middle of this and to see you come through in a mighty way, because I'm trusting that you're using this to prepare me for something else. Because again, you cannot control whether you'll face a giant, but you get to decide how you'll face that giant. So be faithful when you're dealing with the small stuff. Because here's David, he's a shepherd and he's sitting out on the hillside. And a lion sneaks up and runs off with one of his sheep. And David is just a shepherd at this point, seemingly unimportant task, right? Kind of a nobody in the middle of nowhere. And it's just one sheep, and he could have easily said, I'm not going to risk my life for just one sheep. But he did. And it prepared him to face the giant. And in the same way, when we are faithful in the little things, when we face those smaller challenges, but instead of backing down, we stand and we confront that challenge. And we see God come through. It prepares us for what God has in the future. It prepares us for the bigger challenge one day we'll have to face. Be faithful in the small stuff, because when you're facing critics who demean you, who undermine you, who threaten your confidence, be faithful to your calling in that moment. Because your strength, when you're faced with those critics, your choice to listen to the voice of God instead of the voice of the critics, what that means is that you are ready now, when the giant begins to taunt you, to not listen to his taunts and be intimidated, but to say, no, God is telling me to go and fight. Be faithful in the little things. Because just like David, here he is, a shepherd, and he goes to deliver food. Not that big of a task, right? Just an everyday thing, seemingly unimportant. And he's going to help out those who are on the front lines doing the men's work, doing the important stuff, which is basically at this point just running away. But he's going to help out somebody who has a much bigger mission, right? But he goes there and he's faithful. And you know what? Sometimes as we are faithful to what seems to be a small thing, what seems to be a not very important calling that God has on our lives, but we are faithful and we are obedient, that as we do that, you just might come face to face with a massive giant who is threatening everyone else and intimidating and oppressing everyone else. But you, because you were faithful when you faced the bear and the lion and you didn't run away. Because you were faithful when you were confronted by the critics and you didn't lose heart and back down because of them. Because you faced the smaller stuff and overcame it. Now when you see the giant, you are ready to go forward and to take on that giant. So be faithful in the small things. Because the way we handle those smaller things, the way we handle the critics, the way we handle those smaller obstacles, that will either weaken us or it will prepare us for a turning point that God has for us someday in the future. So whatever you're facing right now, God has a plan for that. He's not unaware. It may have taken you by surprise, it didn't take him by surprise. He was fully aware it would happen. And he allowed it into your life, not to defeat you, but to give you a victory that you can build on, so that one day you can face that giant and see victory there too. So God, I pray this morning, especially for those here who are facing those smaller challenges, those little things that are just kind of irritating and frustrating, God, I pray that you will help us to respond to them with confidence and with strength, to respond to them with a deep trust in you that, okay, God, this you're working here somewhere, so I'm just going to follow your lead and trust you and see what you're going to do here. And to do that with the knowledge that you are using that to deepen us in our walk with you and to prepare us for something you have in the future. For those who are here today who are, they've just been wounded by others, by harmful words and harmful actions, and they've been criticized and people have undermined them and tried to make them feel insignificant. God, I pray that you would help them to not even bother to engage with the critics, but to put their voices aside and to listen to your voice and to refocus on what you have called them to do and to not allow the critics to undermine them, to not allow the critics to get them off task. God, I thank you that as we talked last week, you are faithful in the big things, but we want to recognize today you're also faithful in the little things. And even though they are smaller, they still matter and they're still important. And they play an important role in our lives. So help us to respond in a way that honors you. Help us to trust you in the middle of those smaller things and to allow you to build within us and to grow us and to deepen us, to prepare us for what is next. And we thank you for all these things in Jesus' name. Amen.